Welcome to Audit IQ Update for June 17th, 2026. I'm your host, Alex, and as always, we'll be delving into the world of monitoring for e-commerce merchants, covering every aspect from technical, operational, to sales, and more. Let's get into it. We've got a packed week to cover, and I want to start with something that honestly gave me chills when I first read the technical details. SANSEC, the e-commerce security research firm that's been tracking payment skimmers since 2015, published research on a novel WebRTC-based payment skimmer that is genuinely unlike anything we've seen before. Now, most people know WebRTC as the technology that powers video calls and peer-to-peer communication in the browser. What this attack does is repurpose WebRTC data channels, which are normally used for things like sending chat messages or sharing files between browsers, and instead uses them to both receive the malicious skimmer payload and exfiltrate stolen payment data from the victim's browser. Why is this such a big deal? Because it bypasses Content Security Policy, or CSP, which has been one of the primary defenses e-commerce stores use to prevent exactly this kind of attack. CSP works by restricting which domains a page can communicate with. If a skimmer tries to send your credit card number to a dodgy server via a regular HTTP request, CSP can block that. But WebRTC data channels operate outside the scope of CSP enforcement. They establish direct peer-to-peer connections that don't go through the same request pipeline that CSP monitors. So you could have a perfectly configured CSP header, and this skimmer would still slip right through. The attack was found exploiting the PolyShell vulnerability in Magento and Adobe Commerce stores. SANSEC had previously documented the PolyShell vulnerability, which allows unrestricted file uploads via the REST API, and they observed a mass attack wave back in March that hit 471 stores in a single hour. The WebRTC skimmer appears to be the next evolution of these attacks, and what's particularly alarming is that researchers found it had hit approximately 56.7% of stores that were vulnerable. That's not a small number. For anyone running a Magento or Adobe Commerce store, the immediate action is obvious. Patch the PolyShell vulnerability if you haven't already. But the broader implication is more troubling. If attackers are now using WebRTC channels to exfiltrate data, the traditional security monitoring that checks for suspicious outbound network requests won't catch it. You need monitoring that can detect when unexpected scripts are injected into your pages, when your checkout form behavior changes, when new elements appear that shouldn't be there. This is exactly the kind of thing that content-level monitoring picks up that traditional infrastructure monitoring completely misses. Moving on to Shopify, and this one is a real sneaker. On June 16th, Shopify rolled out a change to the customer account API that requires all meta fields to have a formal definition with explicit customer account permissions in order to be accessible. Previously, app-owned meta fields could be read through the customer account API without this ceremony. Now, if your meta field doesn't have a definition, the API simply returns nothing. No error, no deprecation warning in the response body, just an empty value where your data used to be. Think about what this means in practice. If you're running a headless hydrogen storefront, or you've built custom checkout UI extensions, or you're using customer account extensions that display loyalty points, order history annotations, subscription details, or any custom data stored in meta fields that data may have just gone dark for your customers. And the insidious thing is that your monitoring probably didn't catch it because the page still loads, the HTTP status code is still 200, the response time is still fast. Everything looks healthy from a traditional monitoring perspective. But the customer's loyalty balance now shows zero, or their personalization preferences have vanished, or their saved payment nicknames are gone. The fix is well documented. You need to run meta field definition, create for every store that installs your app, or declare your meta fields in your app's TOML file, and configure the access settings to allow customer account API access. Shopify has noted that meta fields owned by customer or order resources aren't affected by this change, so it's specifically app-owned meta fields that need attention. But here's what I want to emphasize. The fix for this specific issue is straightforward. The systemic problem it reveals is not. How many other silent data failures are happening across your storefront right now? How many API responses are returning subtly wrong data because of a version change, a configuration drift, or a third-party update? This is why e-commerce monitoring needs to evolve beyond checking that pages load and checking that they load correctly. Shopify also released a new app subscription cancel mutation in the partner API, available from API version 2026.07. This lets partner API clients cancel app subscriptions for public apps they own, with support for immediate cancellation, deferred cancellation at the end of the billing cycle, prorated credit requests, and optionally skipping the final usage charge for usage billed subscriptions. It's a welcome addition for app developers managing their subscription lifecycle, though it's more of a partner operations improvement than something that directly affects storefront behavior. On the Cloudflare front, we saw a substantial release week. Wrangler 4.101.0 landed with the graduation of autoconfig from experimental to stable. The autoconfig flag, which was previously behind experimental flags, now defaults to true and can be disabled with no autoconfig. This is noteworthy for e-commerce teams using Cloudflare workers for edge logic, because stable autoconfig means more reliable deployments and fewer manual configuration steps when you're deploying workers that handle things like A/B testing, geolocation-based pricing, or edge-side personalization. Miniflare 4.22.26.06.16.0 introduced local support for CF.image transformations via the Sharp library. This means if you're using Cloudflare's image transformation via workers, your local development environment now actually transforms images rather than returning the original bytes unchanged. For e-commerce specifically, this is significant because image optimization at the edge is a critical part of the performance stack. And having DevProd parity for image transformations means you're less likely to deploy something that looks fine locally, but serves incorrectly sized or formatted images in production. There was also a new temporary account flag in Cloudflare Workers Auth version 0.3.0. The temporary flag creates and uses a temporary Cloudflare preview account when you have no credentials, instead of starting the OAuth login flow. This is useful for quick prototyping and CI/CD environments, and it's available on Workers Deploy, KV, D1, Hyperdrive, Queues, and Certificate commands. If you're an e-commerce dev team with ephemeral build environments, this removes a friction point. Let me shift gears now to the broader industry picture, because there are some numbers I want to make sure everyone is paying attention to. Recent research has quantified that payment failures impact 1 in 5 e-commerce orders globally, creating an estimated $47 billion in annual revenue leakage. Let that sink in. 1 in 5 orders encounters a payment failure. Not all of those are lost sales. Some are retried successfully, but the aggregate impact is enormous. Now combine that with the page speed data. For an e-commerce site generating $10 million annually, a 500 millisecond improvement in page load time translates to roughly $500,000 in recovered revenue. Sites meeting Core Web Vitals thresholds see users 24% less likely to abandon page loads, and conversion rate improvements of up to 27% have been documented. These are not theoretical numbers. These are measured outcomes. But here's where the industry conversation gets stuck. We celebrate speed improvements, and we should. We optimize Core Web Vitals, and we must. But we treat functional correctness, the question of whether the page actually works correctly for every customer, as a secondary concern. And the data suggests it shouldn't be. Cart abandonment remains stubbornly high. Merchants on Reddit are reporting that they're losing 75% of carts despite implementing every recovery tactic in the book. Email flows, pop-ups, retargeting, the works. The Baymard Institute's 2026 data shows 18% of shoppers abandon due to a too long or complicated checkout process, and 17% because they didn't trust the site with their credit card information. When you dig into those numbers, a meaningful portion traces back to technical issues, form validation that misbehaves on certain mobile browsers, payment methods that fail to render, trust badges that don't load, address autocomplete that breaks intermittently. These aren't speed problems, they're functional problems. And they're invisible to tools that only measure how fast something loaded, not whether what loaded was correct. I want to highlight a really interesting development in the web performance space. Harry Roberts, the well-known performance consultant, released a library called OBS.js that Smashing Magazine featured this month. OBS.js is a tiny inline script that reads from standard browser APIs to understand the user's context, their network conditions, battery level, CPU capacity, and available memory. It then exposes this information so your front-end code can adapt accordingly. This represents the cutting edge of what I'd call adaptive performance, where instead of serving the same experience to everyone and hoping it's fast enough, you dynamically adjust based on what you know about the user's situation. For e-commerce, the implications are significant. You could serve lighter images and simpler animations to users on slow connections, defer non-critical scripts for users with low battery, or simplify the checkout experience for users on constrained devices. But adaptive performance also introduces new monitoring complexity. If your site serves different experiences to different users based on their context, how do you know that each variation works correctly? You might have perfect core web vitals for users on fast connections, while users on slow 4G are getting a degraded experience that actually breaks some functionality. Your synthetic monitoring running from a data center will never see that. CSS Tricks this week featured Adam Argyle's prop for that library, which is in a similar vein. It creates live CSS custom properties based on things CSS can't normally see, like cursor position, scroll velocity, form states, and current time. The library uses data attributes to trigger scripts that expose these values as CSS variables. It's a beautiful piece of work, and the demos are genuinely impressive. From an e-commerce perspective, this kind of dynamic, context-aware front-end code is the direction things are heading. Product carousels that respond to scroll velocity, checkout forms that adapt to input patterns, promotional banners that adjust based on time of day. More dynamic experiences mean more opportunities for subtle breakage, more states to test, more variations to monitor. Looking at the Magento ecosystem, version 2.4.9 was released back on May 12th, with corresponding security patches for the 2.4.8, 2.4.7, and 2.4.6 lines. Adobe Commerce's shift to monthly isolated security patches in 2026, as documented by the community, means more frequent updates and more opportunities for subtle behavioral changes. Each patch is individually small, but the cumulative effect across a complex storefront is worth monitoring carefully. This is particularly relevant given the ongoing PolyShell exploitation I mentioned earlier. Stores that are urgently patching, which they absolutely should be, need to verify that those patches don't introduce side effects. A security patch that changes how CSP headers are enforced, for example, might block a legitimate third-party script that your checkout depends on. Without monitoring that checks the customer-facing experience after every deployment, you're flying blind. The real user monitoring market continues to grow rapidly, projected at 13.5% compound annual growth to reach $3.5 billion by 2033. But the question I keep coming back to is whether we're building the right kind of monitoring. Most RUM tools tell you how fast the page loaded and how responsive it was to interaction. What e-commerce specifically needs is monitoring that also tells you whether the page was correct, whether the price was right, whether the add to cart button worked, whether the checkout flow completed without data loss. This is the gap that Audit IQ is designed to fill. Not replacing your performance monitoring or your APM, but complementing it with the layer that specifically watches for the things that break revenue without breaking the page. Because in a world where a single Shopify API change can silently empty your customers' meta fields, and a web RTC skimmer can bypass your CSP to steal payment data, and a Magento security patch can subtly alter your checkout behavior, the question isn't just whether your site is fast, it's whether your site is right. One final note on Shopify for developers. Keep an eye on the script's deprecation deadline. Shopify scripts will be fully deprecated on June 30th, 2026, and as of April 15th, you can no longer edit or publish scripts. The migration path is to Shopify Functions or a public app. If you haven't migrated yet, you have exactly 13 days. This is not one to leave until the last minute, as scripts handle critical checkout, shipping, and payment logic. A botched migration could mean checkout failures on July 1st. That's your Audit IQ update for June 17th, 2026. If any of this sparked a question or you want to learn more about e-commerce monitoring, you can find us at auditiq.cloud. We'll be back next week. Until then, keep monitoring.